powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy
Ross.
Jake,
you're going to have to bring us in. I can't do the show right now.
Stacy, it's going to be fine.
You have
another horrendous food take.
It's not a horrendous food take.
So, Stacy just asked us if we were in a fruit draft, what would be our picks?
So, I listened to this wonderful podcast by a sports radio host in St. Louis. Her name is Michelle Smallman. It's called Small Talk, and her co-host had a fruit draft a while back. And as we know, with any draft, you don't reach, right? If you love oranges, but you know you can get oranges in the third round, you go with the fruit that you're probably not going to get. Like, pineapple's going to go off the board first, right? That's going to be, like, your, like, all SEC amazing. Like, you're going to have strawberries off the board in the first round.
I don't think so.
Okay,
that's
so
Pete Carroll and John Schneider style drafting.
No, it's
right
not.
That's
this is exactly the fight we got into right now.
Either.
We did our first round pick. My first round, first overall pick was strawberries. Curtis, you said oranges, and Jake said apples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither of you need to take those two. Those are third round picks.
They're
those
not
are,
third
those
round
are
picks.
Reaches.
They
those
are first those rounders.
Those
they are
franchise
staples.
Starters.
Those are day two fruits.
They
you
are
did not.
Not
need to take them that early. Everyone likes them. They're the utility players. They're starters. You'll get a good 5 years out of them.
Utility
they're not
utility players. They're franchise
they're
hallmarks.
Your blue chips. Apples and oranges.
Yes,
are
which
we
is why
12-year-olds finishing a soccer practice. No, strawberries the most popular flavor. Last time. I'm sorry, are either of these very popular ice cream flavors? Are either of these part of a Neapolitan?
Orange
I'm sorry.
Creamsicles.
Does milk...
That's like one of the most popular ice creams.
Is there orange-flavored milk? Huh? Apple-flavored milk?
No.
Strawberry milk isn't even that good.
We're not even talking about the same context, Stacey. You're talking about flavors and other things. We're talking about fruit.
Here's what I'm most appalled by, and quite honestly,
jeez.
Like, I'm...
It's text from the 2x3. Tracy's taste buds have been ruined by space food.
It's very true.
Listen.
And again, I like strawberries, but oranges and apples, I think, are very easily secured as a first-round pick, and I stand by my apple pick.
I like oranges and apples. If there was a fruit draft, I think the vast majority of people would take strawberries in the first round before they would take apples and oranges because they're doing smart drafting, smart team building. Instead, I put out a poll.
I think you're trying to outthink the room here.
I'm put out a poll. The most popular right now, 60% of people, apple.
Up. Who knew? Who knew, Stacey?
Are you joking?
Weird.
Are you joking?
Weird how the people agree with me. I mean, you've got
Granny. Are there apple Italian sodas?
You've got Granny Smith apples. You got Fuji apples. I mean, you got Honeycrisp. Oh, Honeycrisp apples. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, there's so many ways you could go with this. It's unbelievable.
I just am appalled.
Well, I know that. Can you regroup and regather?
I don't know, Jake. All right. the texts are funny right now. All right. Well, instead I'll get to a topic that's somewhat important. Maybe not as important as this. But Jake, you said the big three needs to change. At 3-8, consistent mistakes have caught up to them. Who are the big three, and what are some of these mistakes?
I mean, really, when you look at it, I think that when you're talking about the mistakes, we've talked about this, you know, from the standpoint of drafting. We've talked about the point of, as a coaching staff, taking the personnel that you have and adapting and changing at your philosophy and willing to morph how you're going to get it done in order to fit that personnel as well. And then the other side of it is, I think that specifically for this year, when you're talking about individuals, you're talking about, you know, Russell Wilson is specifically, I mean, the consistency or lack thereof in terms of the overall performance, right? So those three things have been a recipe for disaster for the team this year. And I think that when you're talking about what is more consistent or what is more of a storyline as to what is more prevalent and what will continue versus what can be changed very easily, that's where you get into a really unique and very interesting conversation about how this team should move forward, how they should progress forward. And I think that part of it is, you know, when we're sitting here right now, 3-8, and this team, and you witness the things that have happened over the years, it's just 3-8. it's one of those things that's surprising to see, but it's just been something that I think that has been inevitable that we've been hoping they would overcome, because they've just been doing it this entire time.
Does change have to mean moving on from someone, though?
No, it doesn't mean having to move on from somebody. It doesn't have to, but it comes down to that fundamental question of, are you willing to change? Are you willing to, you know, look at things differently or get back to, you know, your fundamental principles of who you are and what you're about? I mean, there are certain aspects of this that I think that there are points in time that you have to look at it and say, is this working? Is this a working relationship? Is this something that is healthy to do to continue to keep moving forward and try to keep implementing the same principles, try to keep implementing the same strategies that you have when you know they have not been working for a significant period of time?
What's a strategy that should be changed for any of the three? Like an example of something.
Well, for an example of something that I would point to is that when you're talking about the offseason, you're talking about the acquisition aspect of things. I mean, to me, not addressing the defensive line and offensive line significantly this offseason, I mean, that can't be the case. You can't just I think they've gotten cute with that part of it. I don't think that they've adequately addressed it. And when you're talking about the philosophy and the principles that Pete Carroll has in terms of the type of team that he wants to be, I don't think they've done nearly enough in addressing those two positions so that they can be a, you know, team that can protect Russell Wilson, a team that can be great in the running game, right? And take
get
over games, get after the quarterback and generate pressure, which takes a lot of pressure off of your secondary and linebackers. I think that one key area and philosophy, they have not matched, and it hasn't really made much sense as to why they have not done that or put more of a focus or emphasis in those two areas.
That is one of the more interesting parts, and I know we're kind of shifting gears, and I do want to stay on course here, but just as an aside, it is weird that for a team that is so traditional in a lot of their approach and very much like, we know who we are, this is what we stick to, it's football basics. Well, one football basic principle to me would be winning in the trenches. Like, that is a basic principle, and it is weird the lack of investment there at times. Or rather, it's a mix. It's a lack of investment and then a lack of investment actually panning out.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And that, to me, is also one of the things you have to look at is, are you getting it right? Are you getting it done or not? And that's the thing, is you could sit here and you could look at, well, in a vacuum, hey, this situation could have worked out. There was the talent there, but injuries, or Malik McDowell, who knew this ATV accident would end up happening, right? There's all these things, but in its totality, as you look at it, is it getting better? Is it going in the right direction? And is there evidence to say that you can bank on that ability to be able to identify the correct talent and be able to implement it on the field in the proper way? I mean, right now, I can't confidently say that, right? You know, the other side of it, you know, I heard Mike Saul talking about this earlier today, and I disagree with the sentiment, is that, you know, when it comes to Pete Carroll, that you should not move on from somebody if they haven't lost the locker room. So if the drafting is bad, if the coaching or the execution is bad, but everybody likes the individual, you shouldn't move on from them? I mean, that doesn't make much sense. And I get what he's saying, that, look, Pete Carroll is still a dynamic leader. Pete Carroll is still an amazing culture builder, which he's all those things. But it doesn't mean because that's true, you allow everything else to just be okay, or allow everything else to crumble and say, but he's a great leader. He's a great culture builder, right? And so I'm not saying that you need to move on from Pete Carroll. That's not my point in saying this, but I just think that you have to look at all of it. And when it comes to Russell Wilson, Stacey, you know, for him, as you look at it, I don't believe this is who Russell Wilson is in terms of, is he going on the back half of his career? I think you may have more questions about that than I do. Mm-hmm. Are we starting to see the downfall of Russell Wilson? I don't think so at all. I think he's a great quarterback who's going through a rough patch in his career, and that he is fully capable of coming back out on the other side of it in the right situation and playing great football. But is that here? is that going to be in this place? And is it the right fit between him, Russell Wilson, John Schneider? And is the team better off trying to rebuild with first round picks and trying to, you know, get their cap space back and all those things? Maybe that's the answer. If they don't want to, if they don't view that Russell Wilson can fit or wants to conform to what they want to do, I don't know. I'm just purely talking here, but I don't think so. I don't think that would be the best interest of the Seattle Seahawks. But I mean, you could see it going maybe in that direction because you've seen this year of you know, since the second half of the season of Russell Wilson struggling. Maybe this is just not the right situation for him anymore. If you're talking about what Pete Carroll wants to get back to and what he wants to ultimately end up doing, and if they can't find, they can't get on the same page.
Yeah, there are some people that I think still say like all of that's just conjecture and rumors, and I don't believe it. But I'm now at a point where it feels like there is not a world where all three coexist here next year, and I hope that I'm wrong about that because all three have overseen the most successful stretch of Seahawks football we've ever seen, ever.
Yeah.
They brought a Super Bowl to the city. They've done great things together, but also individually. Pete Carroll individually has done great things. John Schneider individually has done great things. And Russell Wilson, obviously, individually has done great things. So I sure hope that you don't see a separation in a down year, which is that there is a world where what it is a down year that you can correct. I tend to think there are bigger issues that need to be resolved, and I have not figured out yet, which sounds like a cop-out. I have not figured out yet whether those issues are resolved with all three being here, but I don't know what the combination is of people that are here.
So if you were to choose, if you were to choose right here today, Stacey, what that combination would be, or if it's any combination, it's just a single person.
It's not what I think. Well, I'll start by saying I don't ever feel comfortable calling for anyone's job, and I would love there to be a way where all three can find a way to stay together. Preface it by saying that is my personal belief. What I think is most likely, like not what I think, what I think is most likely is that Russell Wilson is gone, and then maybe you move forward from there with what's the relationship between Carroll and Schneider. Do they get something going with new picks and a new influx of talent?
I think that is very true. I think that is could be something that comes down to it. But also, I don't know if I don't know the dynamic between Pete Carroll and John Schneider. I don't know that dynamic right now. They seem to have been working very close in tandem over the years. I mean, you know, John Schneider has a 7-year contract and Pete has a 5-year contract. I don't think that was by accident when it comes to John Schneider's perspective and what he wanted and ultimately what he's trying to get done in that. I think that to me has been a situation where you could look at it and say, well, if I'm John Schneider, I mean, how much control of the draft have I been given? Have I been given that opportunity to really go with the picks that I want? Or has Pete Carroll at the last second always kind of come in and I've done a lot of the work and Pete Carroll comes in and says, hey, I want this, I want that. Or I don't know. I don't know exactly what the dynamic is there. But I think that when you're talking about this current situation, you know, obviously something's got to change. And something's got to get figured out because I just have a hard time believing over the course of the past couple seasons that all is fine and all necessarily believe in one another. And I would love to be wrong on that, but I don't think I am.
All right, Football Fridays are powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. Let's look at this game. What does the Seahawks offense need to do against the 49ers, besides win, obviously?
Well, besides win, what they need to be able to do is they need to take advantage of the fact that Fred Warner is out in this game. And how do you take advantage of that is by running the football. So, to me, that's why I believe that when you're talking about signing Adrian Peterson, you have Alex Collins, you have to be hopeful that this team can run the football. And why do they need to be able to run the football, Stacey? because this group has been pretty good in terms of their pass rush. They've been pretty good in terms of the secondary holding together their coverages. And so what you don't want to be in a position of is you don't want to have to, with Russell Wilson currently struggling, put the game 100% squarely on his shoulders. And you need to have some balance here. Balance will bring the best out of Russell Wilson when it comes to this particular game, this particular matchup. And the 49ers and DeMeco Ryans, the defensive coordinator, has done an amazing job of keeping this team together, keeping this group together, and honestly being great on third down, their third down packages and all that stuff. So they have to be able to run the football. They have to be able to present some balance here. And I think if they can do that, they'll find some success on Sunday.
Second down. Why were you happy to hear Russell Wilson talking about joy? You mentioned that earlier.
I mean, for me, hearing Russell Wilson talk about joy was really refreshing. Let's go to cut number three here.
As a leader and as a person and guy who gets to help lead this football team in the midst of everything that's going on right now, the thing that I think about is joy. You know, you can't lose joy in this midst of this game and midst of everything that we're doing to bring joy to the game, to bring joy to the field, to bring passion, to the mixture of joy and passion, and to be able to do that every day gives you the best chance to be successful, but also allows you to remember that this is a gift that we get to do.
Yeah, I mean, when I watched Russell Wilson at the end of the Green Bay Packers game, when I watched Russell Wilson at the end of this game against Washington, I didn't see that joy. I didn't see that same, you know, fire and everything that we know from Russell Wilson. And I just think that there is so much going on, and Russell has the personality of, I want to fix it. I want to correct the problem. I want to get this done, and I'm going to work so hard, harder than anybody, to try and solve that answer, that sometimes that can be, you can get lost in that, and you can make everything, you could build everything higher than what it needs to be. And getting back to that idea of joy and gratitude and understanding of that this is a game and have fun with it and let the game come to you, I think is the best mindset that Russell Wilson can have. Because when the game comes to him and when he's comfortable, he's one of the game's best quarterbacks, and we would all love to see that. You know, we would all love to see that, Russell Wilson.
Third down. What does the Seahawks defense have to take away from the 49ers this Sunday besides their joy?
Besides their joy. Well, how do you take their joy away? Well, you do it by getting after Jimmy Garoppolo, and you do it by not giving him what he's comfortable with, which is attacking the middle of the field. If you can take away the middle of the field from in that passing game and stop giving him easy completions in the middle of the field, it's going to be a long night for the San Francisco 49ers. And I think that is an area from a passing defense perspective where Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks, they've got to be dialed in, and they've got to play a great game from that standpoint. The other thing that you point to is obviously the run game. And I think that they'll do a good job in that area. I have confidence that they'll do a good job. But if Jimmy Garoppolo gets comfortable, that's when this offense really starts clicking. Doesn't mean he's going to throw for 300, but if he can be efficient, he can move the chains. Kyle Shanahan can really dial things up. If Jimmy Garoppolo is uncomfortable because you're taking away the area of the field that he loves to throw to, and is most comfortable throwing to, then that is where they become one-dimensional, and that is where I think the Seahawks defense can really thrive.
Fourth down. Wanted to save you a couple extra minutes for this one because we're doing something a little new today. You and I are going to sound off about two things, one each, and yours is going to be your fourth down. So, Jake, you have something you want to sound off about.
Yeah, I do.
The floor is yours.
Well, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
It is exciting for every single player, high school player, that is going to be playing in their state championship games this weekend. Congratulations to all of you out there. I am so excited, so happy for you, and I hope your communities are very, very proud of you and go to the games and represent and have a lot of fun, and you make amazing memories. Some of the best memories of my entire life. But what I want to sound off about, Stacey, is that this is one of the biggest moments of these young kids' lives, and they've worked so hard to get there. And yet, the WIAA is putting this monumental moment at random high schools. The 4A 1B state championships will be at Mount Tahoma High School. 3A 2A state championship high school game will be at Sparks Stadium. The 1A 2B state championship high school football game will be at Harry E. Lang Stadium. This is not appropriate for the type of venue that these people should be playing at. This should be larger than life. This should be an experience of a lifetime. And this should be something that the entire state of Washington is able to celebrate together and to be able to go to. Some of my best memories are being able to go to the Tacoma Dome and being able to watch all the games and being able to see that and to have a celebration of that sporting event and to be able to celebrate that special weekend in the state of football for Washington and to see the WIA go on the cheap route and to not try and work out something with the Seattle Seahawks and play at Lumen Field or try to work with UW to, you know, play at Husky Stadium or even to go back to the Tacoma Dome and try and get back in there. The fact that they have not worked extremely hard to do that, I think, is a complete disservice to everyone in the state of Washington who plays high school football. And that to me just really, really bothers me, Stacey, because they deserve better. They deserve better than to play at these venues. And I think the WIAA should really, really be ashamed of themselves for not trying harder.
Well said, Jake. Is it mostly like a finance thing? I guess my automatic thought was, is it COVID related?
No, it's not COVID related. It's all finance related. It's being cheap.
They've been doing this before COVID.
But that's what I'm saying. That feels especially inexcusable. It's one thing if you're like, hey, health precautions, the way things are right now, we can't do this. But if it's like, we didn't work out the contract in time. Man, what are you doing? That's like your one job.
Yeah, it is your one job. So, I mean, it's something that I know could have been done, and they could have worked harder to do so. They did it the first time around, and they wanted to run it back. And I just think it's inexcusable, and I think it's a shame, and it's something that it can't continue. It cannot continue to keep doing something like that. I'm sorry. It is such a joke, and these kids deserve better. They deserve an experience of a lifetime, and now they have to go play at some random high school stadium. And it does not feel like a state championship, Stacey. It doesn't feel like it's big and grandiose. And that is it hurts me. It hurts me for those kids because I know how amazing it was to walk into this grand Tacoma Dome and have this experience and to be able to play in that game and the atmosphere that it created. It's just such a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Now I'm going to try to balance it out with a, not a feel-good story to erase how important that is, but just to kind of balance out that there is at least one cool thing happening. Now, this was actually done by the students themselves, and it was on accident. A Michigan high school basketball team started a group thread with each other, and they messed up one of the numbers and accidentally invited an NFL star to the thread. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Oh, two of the best stories I can remember being in The Timeline of late. I really love both of these. Let's start with this one. Brian Kelly showed up on your timeline for multiple reasons this week. Number one, it was getting that job with LSU. Number two, it was getting that massive deal in that job with LSU. And number three, it was for a new Southern accent he suddenly introduced at LSU. Take a listen.
Thank you. Well, this is a great way to get started, and I haven't even won all my games yet. It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans.
I need you to understand.
My family.
I need you to understand that Brian Kelly is from Boston. I just need you to. I played that sound over and over for a friend.
Oh, my gosh.
And, they did not hear the difference. And I was like, how do you not, this man is, and I get it. I completely get it. All of us have done that thing. You talk to a British person, and after a while, you're doing a weird accent. You're like, stop it. What are you doing? Get away from this. But what? Family?
Yeah.
Brian Kelly, you are from Massachusetts, my friend.
Yes, and it would have been even better if he would have tried to go with the old Coach O, try to go with the old Bayou, go Tigers, at the end. Just to, again, try to, assimilate himself to the culture and to Louisiana and to LSU fans. I mean,
I'm surprised Brian Kelly didn't finish off his saying with, like, I do declare.
it's exactly what happens when someone from Boston thinks, "What? How do people from Louisiana speak? This is what
That's
I'm
right.
It's all stereotypes.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I do declare.
It's just like, wait, you know, first time, good impression, wow. And it also makes you want, did anybody else want to make, throw up when he said, and I haven't won all my games yet? I'm sure, I mean, I'm sure everybody.
You never did that at Notre Dame.
No, and I'm sure everybody else in the SEC is like, okay. Nick Saban's like, all right, let's do this. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, Brian Kelly's going to. Going to have some fun in the SEC.
Interesting point that G made earlier today when he and Mike were talking about it is he was like, it's interesting that none of Brian Kelly's staff went with him.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you why. I mean, nobody likes Brian Kelly. That's exactly why.
Because he made them all shovel snow?
No, not because he made them shovel snow, but he is an incredibly difficult man to work with. And I think that when you're talking about, you know, the coaches ended up staying back at Notre Dame. I mean, I think that they've created something special there. And that's why it was weird to begin with that Brian Kelly left. Because with Notre Dame, I mean, could you make more money? Could the LSU job be more powerful in the landscape of college football? Yes. But in terms of profile, in terms of notoriety, in terms of stability, what he had going on at Notre Dame was very, very impressive.
Next story on the timeline. Now, this one you might have missed. It's one thing that the Brian Kelly video is making the rounds. We all laughed about it. Some people didn't hear it. Some people did. It was like the Laurel Yanni kind of situation. But this is another story, and this one I actually really, really like. A Michigan high school basketball team had a group thread going, and maybe it was a new one because they were adding a few new numbers to it. One of those numbers was entered incorrectly. Oops, my bad. And sometimes when that happens, you get a random person. Hey, this is like Josh in Salt Lake City. I don't know why you're texting me. I'm going to see myself out. Now, this person that they accidentally added, and I love that it's by changing a number or two, somehow they got this person's number. They accidentally added Buccaneers cornerback Sean Murphy Bunting to their high school group chat. Just on accident.
Not bad.
Flipped up one or two of the numbers. All of a sudden, they've got an NFL corner in their group chat. And, he didn't leave it, though. He then FaceTimed the team. You know, hey, guys, it's me, Sean. And introduced them to Leonard Fournette, Rob Gronkowski, Richard Sherman, and Tom Brady. Here's the high school basketball team talking about it.
He said, like, he's from Michigan and stuff. And he sent the picture, like, in the locker room. And then we were like, hold up, this guy actually might be for real.
Mark here actually told Sean at the very beginning to leave.
Yeah.
No one expects to add an NFL player to a group
Mark.
Chat. Like, one in a billion chance.
Mark, get out of here.
Wow, Mark.
Wow,
come on, Mark.
But let me tell you what, I'll tell you this right now. Mark is the Vern of that group. Mark was like, guys, we're going to get in trouble. Take him out of here. And it's an adult. But no, instead they left him in there. And by the way, if you're actually on your timeline on Twitter, there's photos that were sent, like screenshots of the FaceTimes that were sent and everything, where it's actually like Tom Brady just waving to them like, hey, guys, it's me, actual Tom Brady.
That's awesome.
It's fantastic. I love it so much.
That's
and I
so
love
funny.
It, like, you know, like I was making fun of poor little Mark at the end there, but he is right. What are the actual odds of messing up? Imagine that you start a group chat with your friends, okay? And let's say you're all from Seattle, so it would have to be like a Seattle athlete. You mess up one random number, and all of a sudden it's like Buda Baker gets pulled into your chat.
Right.
Or Jermaine Kearse or some other athlete that like maybe has a 206 number. Maybe. And they're like, hey, I'm actually a professional athlete that you accidentally brought into this chat. You're telling me that you could have gotten like Marsha, you know, from like 14 blocks away, or like Tom and Everett or something, and instead you got a professional athlete by accident.
That's
by
awesome.
Changing a number.
But then for them also to go along with it and say, hey, you know, and have fun with it.
That
to me was really cool. I mean, well done by Sean Murphy Bunting. That is awesome.
Have you guys ever been accidentally added to a group chat that you then tried to stay in?
No, not accidentally, but I've had some group chats that I've wanted to be removed from.
Yeah,
and
are
I don't
talking
know how
about
to do
our
that.
Group chat right now?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'll show you how to hide alerts, Jake. It's fine.
Okay, but how do you get yourself out of them?
You have to remove yourself from it, but then it tells the rest of the chat that you did that.
That's fine. I just need to know how to remove myself. I don't care if they know that I left.
You're going to miss so much cool information that we all share with each other.
I'm not talking about our group chat, okay? All right? Just some other group chat that...
Interesting. If you are in a group chat with Jake Heaps, know that he might be talking about you right now.
Well, apparently they're going to find out that I left, so they'll know on their own.
They're going to find out very shortly. Now, Curtis, you mentioned this isn't related to sports nor the timeline, but is it related to this topic? You mentioned that Netflix is considering, or there may be a movie made out of that one unintentional kind of connection made during a Thanksgiving dinner.
That guy
I loved who this story.
Randomly texted a grandma or somebody who was like elderly.
I thought it was the other way around. She was texting about Thanksgiving.
Maybe.
She was texting a niece or a
and
nephew or a
he
grandchild.
He answered and was like, "Hey, I'm not who you think I am, but can I swing by if you got a plate for me?" And she's like, "Sure, yeah, come on over."
So he showed up.
And this was like 6 or 7 years ago, and now they've done it repeatedly. They've done it every single year since then. So I think Netflix is now going to greenlight this into either a series or a like a Christmas movie or something like that.
They're like he brings like his friends and she has her family and they all have Thanksgiving together now.
No way.
I swear, you didn't hear about that?
No.
This was like a viral story when it came out a couple years ago.
Wow.
And every year they send an updated pic on Thanksgiving. Like, here we are, year number 6.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And this is actually true. Someone texting in from the 253. It's really sad because her husband recently passed, which is true, but it's like you have this connection that you form with someone as a support system. It is genuinely a very heartwarming story.
Wow.
All right, so that is it for today's timeline. I really like today's timeline. That was a good one. All right, coming up next. Now, Jake, you sounded off earlier today about high school football and everything that's messed up about how they're planning some of those championships. You're absolutely correct. You hit the nail on the head. I have something I want to sound off about. Here is the topic. It's not going to make sense, but I'm telling you, the NCAA has a spending problem. It's not what you think. I'll tell you what I mean next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Quickly, your IRG injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. This one on the 49ers side. Seahawks in a bit of luck here. Fred Warner and Deebo Samuel expected to miss this upcoming game on Sunday. TBD on whether or not we're going to see Adrian Peterson suited up for the Seahawks, and we've also got our eyes on Rashad Penny to see if he can play. Football Fridays are powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. Jake, I'd like to sound off about something as well. I'd like to just sound off for a minute here, and here's my point. The NCAA has a spending problem, okay? It's not what you think, though. So Here's what I'm talking about. There's this report from Sportico, which is a sports business news site, and they published some really eye-opening figures about the NCAA spending discrepancies between men's and women's programs. In this case, it was specifically men's and women's basketball programs, though I'm pretty confident this would exist among most programs. So you might be hearing that and thinking, well, look at the revenue men's basketball programs are bringing in, and you're absolutely right, because the men's March Madness tournament last year alone accounted for $800 million, which is over 70% of the NCAA's total revenue in 2021. That's a lot of money. So the athletes that contribute to that should be getting the best resources. That means, Jake, that Johnny Juzang should get a scholarship, a meal plan, awesome team dinners, brand new team gear. Not money, though. Not a dollar, though. No Starbucks gift cards, nothing like that. Don't get crazy. Some of you might not care about that, and some of you do, and that's fine. Whether or not you do or not, it doesn't matter, because the NCAA also enjoys a antitrust exemption-like status because of its amateurism rules. It's a complicated explanation that I don't really have time to get into right now, but I will say that there are other rules that they have to follow, like Title IX. And that means making sure they have gender equity. And I want to make it really clear. They are super careful about word choice here, including on the NCAA website. It's not equality. Money and resources don't get evenly split up among men's and women's programs. We all know how this works. But it has to be some kind of divvying up of resources among all these other programs that you would look at and think, you know what, guys, that's fair. That makes sense. It's equitable. It's understandable. This is a fair shot, right, at having a nice program for these women. I got to say, though, Jake, looking at this study, looking at these numbers, they are really toeing that line, really pushing that line. Is it like blatant in your face? I don't know. Maybe you guys be the judge of that, but I think they're really pushing it. Listen to this. In most cases, meal spending on male basketball players was 2 to 1 more than women basketball players. And in some cases, that's saying in most cases it's 2 to 1. In a lot of cases, that exceeded 4 times more, 5 times more, 6 times more. And in at least one case with Oklahoma State, that nearly exceeded 13 times more. 13 times more resources were spent on men's meal expenses. Now, Curtis, you're going to enjoy this. I have two food jokes I wrote down. Tell me what you think of these. Okay. Number one, the Cowboys always make it through the Sweet 16 before losing in the next round, but that's what happens when you eat dessert too fast. No, that one's not so bad. Okay, here's the other one, though. I'm really proud of this one, Curtis. Yeah. At that point, you're not even eating food. You're just eating smaller recruits and using the money to cover your trail. No?
Okay.
Neither was really great. I had to somehow justify spending 13 times more than your women basketball players on meal expenses. Something was up there, so I had to take my shot. Right now, you might be hearing it and also thinking, you know, this depends on the program. Surely a team as decorated as UConn women's hoops can't be trailing their male counterparts, right? But you'd also be wrong, because UConn men's meal equipment and travel expenses all favored men, despite men's and women's teams bringing in roughly the same revenue last year. And speaking of money, guys, let's get back to that, because men's hoops, let's be honest about this, men's hoops does bring in more than women's. It's just the truth, okay? But if your answer to why can't women have a little more spending on training equipment, or I don't know, why can't women athletes have some dinners during tournaments, if your answer to that is because it's a business, then unfortunately the NCAA might have to disagree with you, because they have spent decades trying to convince all of us that they are not, in fact, a business. They're amateur sports. They're amateur sports, Jake. Amateur sports, Curtis. The NCAA doesn't get to separate itself from being a business to avoid paying athletes and then lean on traditional business logic to avoid its actual legal obligations. And the NCAA also, by the way, doesn't need you to defend it here. What are you doing? What are you doing? They're fine. They've got money. They can afford to throw an extra weight rack in at the Women's March Madness tourney or shell out some money for meal cards. And after all, as a reminder, we were just talking about Brian Kelly. These are nonprofit institutions. All that money generated is going right back into the school, right back into those programs, Curtis. That's exactly why Brian Kelly's new 10-year contract with LSU pays him $95 million. And also, by the way, I learned that he gets two cars. Sheesh. And an interest-free $1.2 million loan toward a house. But it's about going back into the programs. That's what it's about. Now, if you heard all of this and you're still defensive, and you still don't think schools should do what they can to make sure they're really just, like, trying. I mean, like, emphasis trying. Making a good faith effort to give their women athletes a fair experience. Then I can't help you. But I sure do feel for you. Since after all this, your arms must be so tired from carrying Mark Emmert's water.
There we go.
There it is.
There we go.
There it is.
That is my sound off. Today.
Your walk off.
Thank you.
Your
walk off
shot.
Wow. That's exactly what that is. I did what I could.
Okay.
I did what I could.
Well, I think, Stacey, you did an amazing job with that sound off. And please, I think that when you're talking about this issue, it really goes to point to, Stacey, the hypocritical nature of the NCAA. I mean, it's absolutely insane. Absolutely insane of the hypocritical nature of the NCAA. And you understand the resources and allocations that are divvied up based off of where the revenue's coming in, based off of what it's required for those revenue sources to compete and to continue generating
that
revenue.
Yeah, no one's being stupid about, like, where the money's coming from and who's generating it.
Correct. But don't try to pretend that you are an amateur system and that you are adequately, you know, being equitable towards women's sports and towards other sports in general. It's just not the way that it that's not the way reality is.
That's not the house you built for yourself.
It's not. And it's disgusting that you try to hide behind that when you don't live up to it. And that, to me, is the part that I have the hardest time with. It is not the understanding as to why things are the way they are. Mm-hmm. It is the pretending and constantly trying to move the goalposts and everything when you have women's sports who are supposed to be looked after and taken care of and you know, have to have and are supposed to have resources and allocations sent to them that really don't get sent to them at all, right? And the NCAA does nothing to try and stop that or try to make sure that that isn't the case. And so, Stacey, I think you perfectly outlined the craziness and the numbers of how drastic it really is.
Well, and another example of just the complete different playing fields that the NCAA has put men's and women's sports on is that the men's basketball tournament up through this last year is known as March Madness.
Yeah.
The women's tournament has never once been given that same trademark.
No, and if I didn't make it clear, people would be like, oh.
Yeah, until now. So yes. March Madness coming up in the 2022 NCAA tournament will both mean the men's and women's. It took until 2022
and
for the same exact basketball tournament to be referred to as.
And again, it's I know that that Curtis, we're up against the clock, and I'm going to close out here. But I think that what I couldn't get over and why I initially sounded off about it and why I couldn't stop thinking about it last night is like, look, I know that there's multiple parts to like just coverage and investment in women's sports. Like, hi, I'm holding up a mirror to myself saying I work in sports radio and don't talk about it enough. Hello, I'm part of the problem. But I also think that like I saw way too many people literally carrying water for the NCAA. And I was like, why do you care? Like if they're saying like, oh, it's fine.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, why are you jumping in here saying like, well, business is business. What are you going to do? Nothing can be equal. And it's like, but that's not what anyone's talking about.
And at the very same token, you're against athletes getting paid.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. And it's like, that's not what any of this is. None of those things. First of all, it's not business is business. You're a nonprofit and you're subject to Title IX. And secondly, like Title IX doesn't require things being divided up equally. Like neither of those things are true. Stop carrying Mark Emmert's water. He doesn't need your help. He's a millionaire. All right. Coming up next, switching to Seahawks here. Seahawks pre- and post-game show host Michael Bumpus joins us. Don't go anywhere.